My guest at this time is Nicholas Irving. He spent 6 years in the Army's Special Operations 3rd Ranger Battalion, 75th Ranger Regiment, serving as both a demolition assaulter and a master sniper. He is the author of Way of the Reaper, My Greatest Untold Missions and the Art of Being a Sniper. Irving set a military record by taking out 33 enemy personnel in a four-month span. He was so successful, he even has an AR-15 rifle named after him. And Nick, thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you.
When it comes to being a sniper, did you volunteer for this? Were you assigned to it? And how quickly did you take to it?
Oh, yeah, I wanted to become a sniper ever since I was in the sixth grade. I made my first ghillie suit. My mom helped me make that. So at a very young age, I knew that's what I wanted to do. And when I joined the military, everything was a volunteer process. Volunteered to become airborne and jump out of planes, and volunteered to go to Rangers and then Ranger school. Volunteered to go to sniper school. Everything's for the most part, you have to volunteer for it. The selection getting there, you may or may not make it. About 70% dropout rate for all the schools that we attended to. But it's one of those things I've always wanted to do, and I set my mind to it. It was a goal that I had, and I definitely love the job. It's well worth it.
Is it something that's instinctual? In other words, is there some aspect of it where you have it or you don't, whether it's your marksmanship,
Oh, yeah.
Your nerve? How would you describe that?
Oh, I think you're born with some of the skill, the traits of being a sniper, the mental aptitude test and some of the psychological evaluations we take. You have to be born with a certain thing. I'm not sure exactly what it is or what they look for. But there's this thing they look for somewhere in your brain, or I have no idea, but you're born with it. Even the shooting portion, you can be taught how to shoot, but stalking and stuff like that, you can be taught how to stalk. But the disconnect or the separation of watching a target and then taking that target out, maybe that's what they look for, but you have to be born with something.
Describe that a little bit, because obviously being able to take out a target is essential to do the job, but also being able to survey the situation, realizing who is a threat and how imminent of a threat they might be, is something that could potentially be subjective. So how difficult is that, and did it get much easier as time went on?
It's really difficult. I would say, to my guys, 90% of our job is just watching and observing, and only 10% is being a surgeon with bullets. It's rare we actually get a chance to pull the trigger. That's the last thing we want to do. The majority of our job is sitting there watching things evolve and happen, like a chessboard or a football field or something, and you're relaying that to the guys on the ground who are kicking in the doors and capturing bad guys. The last thing we want to do is pull the trigger. But was it hard at first? I wouldn't say it was hard. I never really thought too much into it. I wasn't a trigger-happy type of guy. I would let things play out, and, if it happened, if that guy needed to be taken out, then, I had no problem doing that. Or, none of the guys, as well, had a problem doing that. But my determining factor was normally the guys shooting at us. Once you start shooting at our guys, then you're deemed you have to go.
You talk about, I believe it was on your first mission, about all the what-ifs going through your head at that moment, and ultimately a different sniper took out the target you were concerned about at that time. Is that something that happens on every mission, or is that something that you're able to process a little more efficiently, I guess, as you get more used to it?
Yeah, you start to process it more. Like I said, it's my first deployment, and, 6 deployments into the game, or 4 deployments into the game, or third deployment, I was actually I had a chance to see things happen and why things had to be done the way they were done. It was just a weird experience coming fresh out of high school. I was 17 when I signed the paperwork, and my parents signed me off to go to basic training. I found myself in Iraq when I was 18 years old, so that transition of going to high school cafeteria lunch to now going on a mission where your life depends on it, I think that was the hard decision, or the transition for me.
Talk about surveying each scene on a given day, because obviously it's different every day. And in some stories, you can see people trying to do a flanking maneuver, or that's your instinct, is that they're about to do a flanking maneuver. Other times, you tell the story about figuring out the rhythm of a shooter who's popping up into the window and shooting down on your personnel, and by figuring out that rhythm, you were able to take him out. So how do you prioritize, I guess, as you see all these different things that are happening at the same time?
everything, it's a big learning curve. We go through a lot of training to, you know, help us with that. But once you're out there, everything, you know, kind of, you don't forget your training. It just, it's the real thing now. So everything's way different. Priority wise, I just look at, you know, what I feel like, is the priority target. I never really think too much into it in combat. Everything's happening so super fast. There's really no time to think so much on it. But yeah, looking at each situation differently, that was a, you know, that happens all the time. It's like going out there to play football on the football field. The quarterback is always going to see, you know, the play is designed up a certain way, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to happen that way. Everything's always new. Everything's brand new and different, and it becomes a learning experience after a while. But yeah, every mission was different, and it was definitely a learning experience, each and every one of them.
For those of us who haven't been in that situation, we see movies or other depictions of it. Things oftentimes look to be so technically succinct, and everything works well. You talk in here about how your communications unit and your equipment often didn't work right. So how big of a problem was that, and how did you deal with it?
Oh, it seemed like every morning we would go out, or every night we would go out. Our, you know, comms, our communication would always fail. I'm not sure why that was. We called it Murphy's Law. And if it would happen, or if it can happen, it definitely will happen. I have no idea why that happened, though. We would usually, you know, start loading up, getting our gear ready, and we do a communications check, and, we can't talk to each other. So we have this guy who comes out and has to reprogram all of our communications, and sometimes it happens on the mission. It's just technology. Batteries die, and technology is just technology. It's weird.
What was your relationship with the guys you were protecting? How much did you interact with them, and what kind of feedback did you get from them when you were watching their back so effectively?
Oh, they were brothers. They still are brothers. I still talk to these guys, you know, every day, every week at least. They're really like, you know, my blood brothers is what it feels like, and that's how I relate to them. As far as them, what they thought, I never really asked until I got out. A few years later, I got an email from a guy, and he just wanted to thank me for, you know, being his guardian angel. I never looked at it like that, and I don't really take compliments too well, or if you want to call it compliments. It's just, you know, I did a job and did what I had to do, and if I was a guardian angel, then so be it. But that's what he referred to me as.
What reaction do you have? My guess is you probably ignore it to some extent, but when a movie like American Sniper comes out and you get folks like Michael Moore saying that people who do what you do are effectively cowards, what do you say to people like that?
I would say that I have a one-way ticket with his name on it to Afghanistan, and I'd be, you know, I want to see him change his opinion, see if he does change his opinion on using the word coward. Cowards are what the terrorists are.
What would be the biggest differences between Iraq and Afghanistan? I've heard from so many people that it's almost hard to describe the differences from terrain to the urban versus rural to all sorts of different things. But from your perspective as a sniper, what were the biggest differences?
Definitely the terrain features. Afghanistan was a hilly and open type of environment. You can get shot from anywhere. Iraq was almost like being in downtown Chicago or New York or something like that, just on a very, very smaller scale. And I think that my personal opinion that the Afghans fought better. They were, I'm not going to say well-trained. They've just been doing it for so long. They became really good at guerrilla warfare. I think those were the hardest guys I've ever fought with the Afghans and the Taliban up in the mountains. Those guys were relentless and really good at what they do.
You left the service in 2010. That's 1 year before the withdrawal of U.S. forces from Iraq. And, of course, now major combat operations have ended in Afghanistan. At the time, I'm sure you're more focused on your mission than the big picture. But as you look at it now, what do you think?
Right after I got out a few months, I went back to private military contracting, and I was there for the withdrawal of the U.S. Soldiers in Iraq and helped out with that a little bit. Looking back at it, it's almost like I think politics got way too involved with this this whole global war on terrorism and didn't allow our guys to do their jobs effectively or allow us to do our jobs effectively. And we lost a lot of lives, and things got out of hand. You know, when we look at as ISIS today, they've gotten out of hand because we didn't stop them when we had the opportunity to. And most of the places, or all the places that ISIS currently controls right now in Iraq, were the same exact places I was deployed to, and kind of have to ask sometimes, you know, what was it for, or was it worth it? It's a weird struggle or question I ask myself, and we often all do.
If you could offer advice to military leaders going forward, because obviously we see more forces in limited numbers going back to Iraq, and there's a lot of fear that once U.S. forces are gone from Afghanistan, that will look somewhat similar. What advice would you give them?
Let the guys do their job. That's all we ask. Just let the guys do their job.
And finally, Nick, this is your second book. First was The Reaper. Now it's Way of the Reaper. What do you want folks to learn about your service and what your brothers in arms have done here in recent years in defense of this country?
I just want them to understand or get a look at what I had a chance to see, Superman. That's how I described all my guys. They were like Superman. And having that chance to see the sacrifice these guys make day in and day out, the superheroes they are, having a chance to serve with them, and how regular these guys are, how we all are, very emotional guys. We're humans at the end of the day, but I also want the public to see that as well. But just the whole human aspect of it, and the sacrifices that these guys have made.
Nick, it's an amazing story. We thank you so much for your service to our country. We're glad you're back home safe, and best of luck with the book.
Thank you. Thank you a lot.
Absolutely. Nicholas Irving is a veteran of the Army Special Operations 3rd Ranger Battalion, 75th Ranger Regiment. Master Sniper is among the roles that he had in service to this country. His book is Way of the Reaper, My Greatest Untold Missions and the Art of Being a Sniper. I'm Greg Corumbus reporting for Radio America.